Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. ISKCON VBT Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Tantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sankirtan Chagya Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Nitai Go Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki. That's all right. I mean, it smells nice.
Yeah.
So now is there any? So there's no GBC now for Alachua.
No GBC.
For the time being, there's no GBC.
It's the secretary of GBC.
North American GBC.
Anuttama
GBC. Oh, okay. Just curious. Miami has no GBC. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 6, Text 30 and 31. It's like a double text. Maharaj Pariksit passes away. You get free water here when you do crazy. That's allowed.
It's very refreshing.
Very refreshing. Mercy, mercy. And so, I guess how should we do this? Double text is pretty time consuming. I guess we have at least, hopefully we have 7 days. All right, what we can do is, we'll just do the first part, the first of the double text, and then I'll just read myself the second part. Na yatra dambiti abaya virachita mayatma vade sakrid atma vadibihi na yat vibhadam vividas tad Ashrayo manascha sankalpa vikalpa vritti yat dambit yabaya vira. Let me try that again. Nayatra dambit yabaya virajitam. Mayatma vade sakridatma vadibihi.
Mayatma vade sakridatma vadibihi.
Nayat vivado vividas tadashrayo.
Nayat vivado vividas tadashrayo.
Manascha sankalpa vikalpa vrittiyat.
Manascha sankalpa vikalpa vrittiyat.
Nayatra dambiti abaya virajita. Mayatma vade sakridatma vadibihi.
Mayatma
Niyad vivado vivadas tad ashrayo. Manascha sankalpa vikalpa vrittiyat. Read the other text and then word for word for both. Nayatra sricham srijata vayo param shayascha jivas sivir anvitas paham kadeta utsadita bhaja bhagatam nisadya min tan munihi. Is a great example of yukta vairagya, no? This is a case where the technology yantra vidhi is very useful, that you can all chant along like that by seeing it on the screen. Not. Yatra. In which? Dambi.
He is a hypocrite.
Iti. Thinking thus. Abhaya. Fearless. Virajita, visible. Maya, the illusory energy. Atmavade, when spiritual inquiry is being conducted. Asakrit, constantly. Atmavadibi, by those who describe spiritual signs.
No.
Yet, in which? Vivada. Materialistic argument. Vivida.
Taking many different forms.
Tad-ashraya.
Founded upon that illusory energy.
Mana, the mind. Cha,
and.
Sankalpa,
decision.
Vikalpa,
and doubt.
Vritti,
whose functions?
Yat, in which, nam, not, yatra, in which, Sri Jyam,
the created products of the material world,
Sijata, along with their causes, Ubayo, by both, Param, achieve, Shreya, the benefits, Cha, and Jiva,
the living entity,
Tribi, with the three, in parentheses, modes of nature, Anvita, join to, indeed, aham, in parentheses, conditioned by, and then false ego, tat etat,
that indeed,
utsadita,
excluding,
badya,
the obstructed,
and in parentheses, conditioned living beings,
Badakam,
and the obstructing, in parentheses, modes of material nature.
Nishidya,
warding off.
Cha,
and
Urmin,
the waves, more parentheses,
of false ego and so on.
Iramita, should take special pleasure,
tat,
in that,
Muni,
a sage. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada, by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. But there exists a supreme reality in which the illusory energy cannot fearlessly dominate, thinking, I can control this person because he is deceitful. That's Maya speaking. In that highest reality, there are no illusory argumentative philosophies. Rather, they're the true students of spiritual science constantly engage in authorized spiritual investigation. In that supreme reality, there is no manifestation of the material mind, which functions in terms of alternating decision and doubt. Created material products, their subtle causes, and the goals of enjoyment attained by the utilization do not exist there. Furthermore, in that supreme reality, there is no conditioned spirit covered by false ego and the three modes of nature. That reality excludes everything limited or limiting. One who is wise should therefore stop the waves of material life and enjoy within that supreme truth. Purport. The illusory energy of the Lord, Maya, can freely exert her influence over those who are hypocritical, deceitful, and disobedient to the laws of God. Since the personality of Godhead is free from all material qualities, Maya herself becomes fearful in his presence. As stated by Lord Brahma, Vilad Jamananaya Yasya Stanam Ikshapate Muya. Maya herself is in quotes. Maya herself is ashamed to stand face to face with the Supreme Lord. Anybody know where Lord Brahma states that? Second canto?
Yeah.
Okay. In the supreme spiritual reality, academic wrangling is completely absent. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.31, Yachchaktiyova dadamva dinamvai vivada samvada bhuvo bhavanti kurvanti chaisam uhur atma moham tasmai namo nanta gunaya bhune. Translation. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses unlimited transcendental qualities, acting from within the cores of the hearts of all philosophers who propagate various views
He causes them to forget their own souls, while sometimes agreeing and sometimes disagreeing among themselves. Thus he creates within this material world a situation in which they are unable to come to a conclusion. I offer my obeisances unto him. Om Agyanakya Miranda Sajananjana Sarakya Saksun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudvina Maha. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Is Pushkar Prabhu present today? Oh, Hare Lord Pushkar. Remember about a year and a half ago, you very kindly brought in your collection of shloka cards, and you showed it to me. You may not remember. Shloka cards? The brown ones, yeah, ovalized and everything. So I can't compete because yours go back to the early 70s. Mine go back only to the late 70s. But I have to show off that I have one card that could a little bit compete with yours. No, I didn't steal it. No. And this card is the same verse that Prabhupada is quoting, that the followers of Prabhupada are quoting in the purport, Yachchaktyo Vadatam. This is actually from the Hamsa Guya prayers composed by, uttered by Prajapati Daksha. He recited. And it's nice and brown, it's got a nice patina, and it's kind of ovalized. We'll discuss that later. So for me, it's interesting, my own introspection that I chose such a philosophical verse as one of the first sloka cards I wrote was this very philosophical verse. Doesn't mean I'm a great philosopher by any means. Kuranti chai samuhat muhantam. And it's a warning, it's a real warning, and it's quite befitting that it was the main feature of the purport of today's verse. So there are three kinds of public speaking, as I may have mentioned a few years ago. One is just reading, another is extemporaneous, and the third is impromptu. I learned this back in 1964 or so, when I had to take a required speech course in Brooklyn College in New York City. So you'll get a little of all of these, because I had a computer problem yesterday afternoon, and it kind of ate up the time I was going to use to prepare the class. So at the beginning it's prepared, and that's, and as I sometimes do, I'll just read what I wrote in preparation. From that, it will have to sort of take off into very extemporaneous, because I do have some notes here, but they're not as organized at all as they would be if it put it in the computer. And the third is called impromptu, which is just like winging it, you know, off the cuff, you know, like just if it sounds good, say it, you know, so wish me luck. So hopefully there won't be too much of that, although that's not bad if you get some mercy. So first part is a little bit like the introduction, the background, the context. Brihaspati didn't simply demand that Maharaj Janamajaya desist from further sacrifice of countless snakes. I just recent, not too long ago, I saw Bhakti Marg Swami, and when he does the word for word, he does a pantomime. I can't light a candle to the way he does it, but snakes.
but rather provided him with conclusive philosophical bases for stopping this macabre sacrifice. Macabre means like weird and scary. Then, after concluding that this behavior of Janamejaya was but an exhibition of the illusory energy of the Lord, in today's double verse, Shukadeva Goswami goes on to indicate a, quote, supreme reality in which the illusory energy cannot fearlessly dominate. He describes this absolute realm by a series of negations, listing entities such as the material mind, which are conspicuous by their absence from that absolute realm. That's what we were hearing in the verse. There's a whole list of things which you don't get in the spiritual world or the absolute realm. Indeed, that, and this is a quote from the verse, I guess, that reality excludes everything limited or limiting. One such phenomenon cited is mundane wrangling. In other words, that's one of the items that's not included in the supreme absolute reality. That is no place in the spiritual world. Yeah, I know. When you go to more confidential pastimes, sometimes you get argument between Krishna and Radharani, and they play with words and they do things like that. But for all intents, for our present purposes, it does not exist in the spiritual world. And it wasn't mundane wrangling, that for sure. It's just transcendental wrangling. Sometimes Krishna and Radharani would even play a game of dice. Did you know that?
Sure.
Okay. Of course, not only is there no mundane wrangling, there's no mundane anything there. Now, this all too common sophisticated waste of time, I'm talking about mundane wrangling, is the theme of today's short purport, or not the whole theme, but a good chunk of it, which consists mostly of the citation of a different verse, namely that 6.4.31 verse from the Hamsaguya prayer. So we will attempt some discussion on this topic. That's what I wanted to do, including reference to the purport to this sixth canto verse that Shaktiyo Bhadatam Bhadatam Vibra. I think it's pertinent. I'm not just trying to fill up space, but I think it's pertinent to read that translation again of the cited verse. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses unlimited transcendental qualities. Acting from within the cores of the hearts of all philosophers who propagate various views, he causes them to forget their own souls, while sometimes agreeing and sometimes disagreeing among themselves. Thus he creates within this material world a situation in which they are unable to come to a conclusion. I offer my obeisances unto him. That's interesting. This, you think of the Bible verse. What was the value of gaining the whole world if you lose your eternal soul? So that is a warning for the karmis. But the same verse in this context, the same biblical quote, can be invoked for warning the jnanis also. What do you gain if you get those amazing arguments and write thick books of philosophy and get 18 letters after your name and all these things if you're forgetting your own soul, as Prajapati Daksha was quoting from the Hamsaguya prayers. So, there's a particular part of the purport that I'll read to the verse, the sixth canto verse. I'm quoting from Srila Prabhupada's purport of that verse. So this prayer by Prajapati Daksha, known as Hamsaguya,
includes the observations that worldly philosophers are, quote, unable to come to a conclusion. Not only did they suffer this handicap, no, wait a second. No, I'm sorry, this is my own stuff. This isn't from the, I do want to read from that purport. Just give me a second, I'll segue, that's a popular word nowadays, segue over to the database, and I'll read it from there. Philosophy means finding the ultimate cause. This is from Prabhupada's purport to 6.4.31. As Vedanta Sutra very reasonably says, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, human life is meant for understanding the ultimate cause. Devotees accept that the ultimate cause is Krishna because this conclusion is supported by all Vedic literature and also by Krishna himself, who says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavat, Bhagavad Gita 10.8, I am the source of everything. Devotees have no problem understanding the ultimate cause of everything, but non-devotees must face many opposing elements because everyone who wants to be a prominent philosopher invents his own way. In India, there are many parties of philosophers, such as the Dvaitavadis, Advaitavadis, Vaisheshika, Mimamsakas, Mayavadis, and Svabhavavadis, and each of them opposes the others. Similarly, in the Western countries, there are so many philosophers with different views of creation, life, maintenance, and annihilation. Thus, it is undoubtedly a fact that there are countless philosophers throughout the world, each of them contradicting the others. So, what I was reflecting on this, that this prayer by Prajapati Daksha, known as Hamsa Guya, includes the observations that worldly philosophers are unable to come to a conclusion. Not only did they suffer this handicap in the course of their speculations concerning what exists, but then again, in their discussions about such discussions, that exercise is known, of course, as the theory of knowledge or epistemology. Immanuel Kant's Critique of Pure Reason may figure as the most famous of such abstruse attempts. In other words, this is an attempt to analyze the efforts in philosophy, to analyze the reason itself. And it was reasoning about reason, knowledge about knowledge, or epistemology. Even within our own tradition, we have the pastimonious, I think I invented a word there, we have the pastimonious example of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself in his youthful phase as Nimai Pandit, confounding and bewildering everyone by first defeating any argument, then by countering that argument, and then again by refuting that counter argument and thus reestablishing the first one. Kind of drove everyone crazy. Indirectly, he was teaching us all how logic and argument in this world inevitably gets caught up in sophistry, relativism. There was a guy by the name of Pyrrho, P-Y-R-R-H-O, going back at least a couple of thousand years. And he was very famous for this relativism. He traveled a lot. And he noticed in different cultures, people have different values, they even have different logic, they have a whole, you know, so he came to the conclusion, based on his experience, that it's all relative. In general, his failure to reach a solid conclusion. So I wrote here, unpack, quick anecdote to Washington Square Park in the 60s, so I love to get into that stuff. So back in the 1960s, that was the last century, in Washington Square Park, Prabhupada chanted there a few times also, in addition to Tonkin Square Park, Kirtan, in those very early days. Besides playing folk music on banjos, guitars, and mandolins, and washed-up basses, all around the fountain in the summertime. It was a very pleasant fountain. You get some of the spray of the cool water. It was very nice. But there was also another so-called Leela that took place, that we would get into these rap sessions. In other words, we used to call them bull sessions. They just go on and speculate and speculate and speculate philosophy or politics or something. And this would go on for quite a while. And it didn't get that far because there was too much beer being drunk during this so-called philosophical exercise. And then there was always someone, sooner or later, after a long waste of time, there was someone who would come in and say, "Anyway, man, it's all relative." And then we'd all go and do other stuff. So didn't get very far. So that's this relativism. And so that's a problem because they're trying to get to some conclusion, but then that gets criticized. There are so many theories and philosophies in epistemology. One is foundationalism, that that my belief is justified because it's based on some solid truth. But even that could be questioned. How do you know that that's solid? You might say, even something like all men are mortal. You don't really know that by just experience or by even by science. You can speculate and be, you know, then there's another, they even compromise on conclusive truth by coming up with a theory of reliabilism, what is it called? That something's very likely to be true. But, you know, they say a miss is as good as a mile. You don't know for sure. Prabhupada would equate the imperfection of mundane science and philosophical speculation useless. In other words, if we have a source which is perfect, then a miss is as good as a mile, as we say in America, where we happen to be right now. So that's a great defect. You all know the verse from the Mahabharata. The first two lines are particularly pertinent. Tako pratista, and then also nishavrishi yasya matam nabinam. That tarko, mundane argument, is apratista. It has no basis. Which is not surprising because even the mundane ontology or atheistic conclusions about the universe are certified also as apratista. They're proud of it. They say that, how does it go? The 16th chapter, 8th verse, you know. No, before that, the most famous one. They say that. Well, how's it start? Yeah, it says that. Kimanyat kama haitukam. You know that. Someone else know that. That they say that this world is unreal. Asatya pratistante jagadat hur anishvaram aparasparam sambutam kimanyat kama haitukam. And it doesn't have a good result because they, based on this kind of relativism, this kind of vacuous non-conclusion, that there's no basis to reality, that it's just everything's automatic and it's all just based on lust. The demoniac behavior is a natural corollary. Pravaya Ugra Karma Nakshaya Jagato. They engage in horrible, unbeneficial work meant to destroy the world. So we can elaborate on that, but we don't have time. So that's their philosophy, that they say this world is unreal, therefore apratista, that it has no basis, therefore their arguments are also apratista. They have no ultimate basis, so it just goes around in some huge circle. And then that's supposed to be wrong, circular reasoning, that's a logical fallacy. So they fall into the whirlpool, like the circle, of their own limitations. Why are we so, you know, squeaky clean, and they're so nasty, dirty? You know, why are we holier than them? I can't help it, we are. False modesty. I mean, you know, at least compared to the demons, I'm a little bit better, I hope. I asked my father, this is really amazing, actually. I asked my father, he looked at me, and after I was in the process of actually joining in 1975, and he looked and he made this face, and he said, "Juan, you become a monk," like with total disdain. And I said, "Look, Dad, you know me. You know what a hippie I was." He says, you know, I used to be a monkey. And now I'm a monk." So I challenged him. I said, "Dad, what would you prefer? What would you like? Would you rather be a monkey or a monk?" And he kind of thought for about it a second. He said, "Monkey." My poor father. But he got some special mercy because he spoke with Prabhupada personally in 1966, as I mentioned many times. And so at the end of his life, he actually started to demented. But he was chanting Hare Krishna mantra, more or less, not exactly the order. And he also became very proud. Abhayananda, you know, all know Abhayananda, blissful devotee from Colombia. He was with me, actually. He's an eyewitness. He was with me when my father was bragging about how he said, "I spoke to the old man Bhaktivedanta before any of you." I was the first. And I said, "Dad, why are you so happy about that? You're not into philosophy, Hare Krishna, nothing. You're not even into religion. Why are you so happy about it?" "What do you mean? He's a great man. He started Hare Krishna all over the world. And I was one of the first who spoke with him." See how Lord Chaitanya makes arrangements? Even my father, in his own way, he glorified Prabhupada. And somehow or another, he went to see him in 1966. It's amazing. So, yes, folks, I'm like a walking, talking museum exhibit from 26th Second Avenue. I don't know how I do it. Somehow I'm still on the planet. So where were we going with this? I was telling you how the implications of this kind of foundationless so-called philosophy. So that verse in Mahabharata, that there's no basis, apratista. Then I wrote, "Too bad, out of time to prepare." So just read the following song. I already did that. Okay, then it says include. All right, what I'll do is I'll close the computer because I kind of came to a dead end there. And I'll just try to be a little extemporaneous, if not impromptu.
I thought there was sin in the mind.
What? Extemporaneous is when you have some notes, but you don't have like very detailed plan, what to speak of written out, like I was reading at the beginning. And then the most impromptu is the most spontaneous, is the impromptu, where you don't know, have any idea. You know you're supposed to speak on a topic, that's the only thing you know. And then you get up there and you just wing it, and it just comes out. Some devotees are so scholarly and so deeply philosophical that they can, you know, do impromptu presentations and they come out better than like my prepared 10-hour presentation. Some examples of the wrong conclusions that come out of this is great. I almost used up all the time. Some examples are listed in the prayers of the personified Vedas. There would be 10th chapter, 87th chapter, 10th canto, text 25. Supposed authorities, who declare that matter is the origin of existence. In other words, that life and matter come from matter. That the permanent qualities of the soul can be destroyed, like Professor Katovsky, Swamiji, when death and the body is finished, everything is finished. He said it with great, quote, authority, unquote. And Prabhupada was amazed that a professor can be so foolish. That the self is compounded of separate aspects of spirit and matter. Now that can be tricky. In the material world, sometimes we, in Bhagavad Gita, sometimes Prabhupada referred to the living entity as this combination of spirit and matter, like in chapter 7, text 6. Itadyonini bhutani sarvaniti upatari aham krishnasa jagata prabhava palayastanam. All that exists in the spiritual world, whether material or spiritual, know that I am the origin and the dissolution. And Prabhupada refers to living entities as consists, but we're not talking about living entities in the embodied conditioned state. We're talking about actual soul. And that's what this verse is criticizing, that the supposed authority, bogus authorities, say that the self is composed of separate aspects of spirit and matter. This is such a common mistake in the world today, and in many thousands of years, people get confused about that. Well, that material transactions constitute reality. All such authorities base their teachings on mistaken ideas that hide the truth. The dualistic conception that requires some unpacking, which you don't have time to do, that the living entity is produced from the three modes of material nature, is simply a product of ignorance. Such a conception has no real basis in you, for you are transcendental to all illusion and always enjoy perfect, total awareness. Another insight, I could just use up the time somewhere. I could have gone on for hours. But don't worry, it won't happen. In the 11th canto, chapter 22, verse 6, we have Yesham Vyatikarad Ashit Vikabho Vadatam Patam Prapte Same Dame Pyeti Padastam Anu Shamyati. You know that one? You don't. 50% of your life is worse than that. Yeah, Vadastam Anu Samyati. When Pushkar doesn't know a verse, which is very rare, he learns it in about 4 minutes. No, I will show off your amazing ability in that regard. Maybe Pran Govind also would know this. By interaction of my energies, different opinions arise. But for those who have fixed their intelligence on me and controlled their senses, differences of perception disappear. And consequently, the very cause for argument is removed. So I asked a more or less rhetorical question. That's not a shloka type. More or less rhetorical question about 17 minutes ago about what makes us holier than them, what makes us more free from these pitfalls. And the reason is not that difficult to explain, although Sahotra Swami wrote a whole book on it called Substance and Shadow, pointing out how in Western philosophy The reliance is 100% on what we understand, the nomenclature of Pratyaksha and Anuman, of experience, sense perception. Doesn't matter if your sense perception is amplified by microscopes and telescopes and spectroscopic this and that or whatever, but it's what it is. And then based on that, by a process of induction or inference, you get to some kind of speculative general theory or rule, like Darwin. He sees some changes in the beaks of finches in the Galapagos or something, and he comes up with this grand theory of his version of evolution. So that's the basis. We have Shabda, we have Shabda Brahma, and that is not without a basis, that is not without a foundation, that is solid. We hear about axiomatic truth. Well, different people may choose their own axioms, but in the Vedic paradigm, we are not on a teetering platform. In other words, our foundation is rock solid. This is Krishna. Now, someone in Ravindra Swarup Prabhu's seminar on knowledge and faith and knowledge, he points out that people may criticize and say, okay, well, then that's another paradigm. Talked a lot about paradigms. So that's another paradigm. You have your Vedic paradigm, your Vedic Vaishnava paradigm. So you have your paradigm. So then paradigms can be seen as relative. And then Ravindra Swarup said, yes, you can say like that, but we have the preferred paradigm. I mean, I guess it's, you might say it's slightly subjective. Not really. We have the preferred paradigm because it's Krishna's paradigm. Now, you might say that, okay, then what's your basis of Krishna? Well, again, if you discount evidence from authority, like in Bhagavad Gita, anyetve phama jananta, what is it, chupanevya pashate, tepi chati trantyeva, mityum shruti parayana, that even if you know zilch, that is a New York expression, it means nothing, nada, garnished, nothing about philosophy. You don't have, you're not versed in philosophy or versed in Vedic scriptures even. Then, because of their tendency to hear from authority, they also transcend the path of birth and death. They also can reach the supreme abode. So, that is our saving, that is our lifesaver, that we don't discount Shabda. Sahotra Swami, in his book, Substance and Shadow, he distinguishes Shabda Brahma from the Western lame imitation of it called ipse dixit, Latin expression. Ipse dixit just means, yes, he said that, or teacher has said, or someone has said. But the reason Western philosophy shies away from hearing from authority, because they lack Sri Guru Parampara, they lack actual authority. So, you know, burnt once, twice shot. There used to be that bumper sticker years ago that used to say, question authority. Yeah. Remember that? Understandable that in the West, this Shabda Brahma degrades into ipse dixit, and they say, no, we don't want to base, we have to speculate, we have to perform experiments, we have to use other methods. And they can never really arrive at a conclusion, because then it all turns out to be a big universe of relativity. So not necessarily referring to Einstein. So let's just jump to the chase, a leap of faith, jump to the chase, that what is the solution to this? There is a solution. One solution was implied by the verse I already quoted, that fix one's intelligence on me, Krishna recommends in Uddhava Gita in 11th canto, and control your senses. That really helps a lot. Jnana, Vairagya, fix your intelligence in me, then the differences of perception disappear, and consequently the very cause for argument is removed. So that's one solution. Fix our intelligence on Krishna, which is the basis of everything, even of contradictory conclusions, or contradictory phenomena, or contradictions in general. Everything is resolved. It's like the next step beyond Hegel's famous, you know, idea of, and others had that idea of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. So we can say we got thesis and, you know, achintya veda veda time, as it sort of relates to. So it goes beyond that, because it's not just an ongoing process, when will it end, but it's a conclusion. This synthesis is based on the absolute truth, which obviously has to embrace all contradictions, apparent contradictions, or real contradictions, but they're no longer contradictions when we refer to the basis of everything. Krishna says, I'm the basis of everything. Chapter 9. Text 18, Bhagavad Gita. So that's one solution, and other solution is a little sweeter, I think. Yato prapyanya vartanta, this is Canto 3, Chapter 6, Text 40, the last verse in the chapter, and it's Maitreya speaking to Vidura. Now we'll see if Pushkar knows this one. This is being a little bit gamey here. This is yato pratyan yavartanta vachascha manasa saha aham chanya ime devas tasmai bhagavate namaha. It's not that I used to know it. It's words, mind, and ego with their respective controlling demigods have failed to achieve success in knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, we simply have to offer our respectful obeisances unto him as a matter of sanity. Who is crazy? A matter of sanity. It's not a matter of intellectual achievement. It's not a matter of epistemological or epistemic acuity. It's not a matter of being cool. It's a matter of sanity. Prabhupada asked him once, I used 3.6.40. Prabhupada once asked me in 1971, I had a personal darshan by the mercy of the devotees in Boston. He raised his eyebrows, looked me right in the face and said, are you still crazy? So I told him that, Srila Prabhupada, when I used to speak to you in 1966, I was very crazy. And then he asked me that. No, Srila Prabhupada, I'm not crazy. And I tried to prove it to him, but actually I was still a little bit goofy, at least. So here's the solution. One may argue that, if you can't know Krishna, then aren't you left back in relativity or uncertainty or doubt? But knowing Krishna is not completely, discounted. We can't know Krishna completely, but we can know more and more about Krishna and become more and more ecstatic and more surrendered. And by surrendering, we know more. And by knowing more, we become more surrendered. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Well, a lot of things, right? Itam vibhutim yogam cha mami yovitkitatata so vikalpena yogina yujate natra samshayaha. One who knows in truth my mystic power, this opulence of mine, what does he do? He at once engages in my service. Of this there is no doubt. And he makes the same point again in the next verse. Buddha Bhava Samandita. They worship me with all their hearts when they know. And Krishna gives a little example of his opulence, that he happens to be the source of all the worlds, both material and spiritual. Not bad, right? So So we're on very solid ground. Our epistemology is not hampered by our reluctance. We don't have any allergy against hearing from authority. So that is our saving grace, and that's why we can. Then it's just a question of practice and purification, and we become more and more convinced, and we become more and more convinced of our epistemology, and we'll go back to home, back to God. And any questions or comments? I left everyone bewildered. Okay, Mataji has a question. It says that I'm supposed to repeat the questions for the online audience. Okay, so first you repeat for the inline audience, and then we'll go to the online audience.
So the synopsis, the last verse that you quoted, I remember it word for word, but you were saying something that once a devotee understands Krishna's opulence, then he engages in devotional service. Oh, it's right there. Perfect. There's another verse, and I don't remember it exactly, that says that once we engage in devotional service, then Krishna gives us the knowledge with which we can know him.
Then he what? Then he gives us...
Yeah, so once those devotees who are constantly engaged in loving devotional service, to them I give the knowledge with which they can come to me. So it sounds like both ways, no matter what kind of person you are, if you're attracted to already knowing about Krishna, or you just think he's beautiful so you want to serve him, either way Krishna's going to get you.
Yeah, it's both ways, not in the sense of circularity, but in the sense of a dynamic principle. It's like dynamic, you know. You serve Krishna, you understand him, you understand him, you'll serve him. When Krishna gives the Dadami Buddhi Yogam. That is the... Someone else? Is that Dhamma? Oh, I was supposed to... If listening on the radio, I'm supposed to repeat the question. The last was more like a comment, just that... bouncing off the verse that I just quoted about that one who knows Krishna's opulence, Krishna says he once engages in my service, there's no doubt about it. And it was just pointed out how by engaging in service we know more about Krishna, and by knowing more about Krishna we're more disposed to engage in service, so it's a wonderful thing. Now Dharmaraj Prabhu will pose a question.
This is more a Leela question, Maharaj. You said, you know, after you change from monkey to monk, what became of that monkey that you had in the basement of your store?
Well, that's a different monkey business.
Yeah. I was just curious what happened.
You're just remembering that I used to have a monkey.
Yeah.
That one. Yeah. Well, that was not. That was actually Satsrup Maharaj. He knew my monkey. Is a real live monkey, kind of large, skinny but large, called a woolly monkey. When it's 9:00. If anyone wants to go exactly at the time, there's no offense, you can go. But give me 5 minutes if you don't mind, and I'll just tell this. I'm being asked to do it. So this is in 1969. I mentioned this many times, but I had $2,700 because I got married legally, which is completely like a completely crazy thing for a hippie to do. A hippie's not supposed to do that. But I actually got legally married. And we had a wedding, and I got $2,700. I already had 50 jobs. I can still list them. That's 50. Entry-level jobs, and I didn't want to work anymore for anyone, so I wanted to have my own business. So I went to buy a business. Now, what kind of business can you buy with that money? Not much. So my new dear wife, she found a little ad in the Boston Phoenix, which is kind of equivalent to Village Voice, but in Boston. And it said, you know, a little tiny cheap ad, a little tiny 8-point type. And it was a you know, used furniture and, you know, just a used junk store, that's all it was. So, okay, maybe we can buy that. So we go there, and I walk in the store, and I guess you got more than you bargained for with this answer, but I walked in the store, and it was a junk store, and there were two hippies smoking the weed, and they were so zonked, they didn't even bother to get up and try to sell the business. They said, yeah, man, check it out. You like it, buy it. If you don't want it, it's okay. We want to go to Puerto Rico and chill out for a while. They were just smoking them. And they were closely related to the group, which was just starting, called Aerosmith. Aerosmith became my customers. They were only bought hair dryers for $1 in my junk store. So I go in the store and, looking around, enjoying the atmosphere, inhaling it a little bit. And all of a sudden on the floor, I see this white sign and white paint with red letters. It says Sri Sri Radha Krishna Temple. And I said, what the heck is going on? Because I was already chanting, even on beads. I mean, I had my darshans, and I was, I was kind of like, we didn't call them congregation members, we called them fringies. So I was a fringy in good standing, Well, I wasn't following everything so orthodox, but I was chanting sometimes more, sometimes less. And anyway, so I said, wow. And then I saw a basket, and it was filled with this cheap incense. And I saw another, this big basket. And it was filled with poetry books. And guess what the name of the poetry book was? Krishna. Now why did, what are you guys doing with all this Krishna stuff? I said, hey man, you're really out of it. Don't you know this was just the Krishna temple a few months ago? It blew my mind. It really actually helped me become a little less of an atheist. I'm still working on it. But it was really inspiring that out of all the stores in Boston, somehow or another, I would end up, Prabhupada was there with his lotus feet there and preaching there. And Satsang Mart started it, maybe a year and a half, 2 years earlier. And now, when you buy that store, there were two reasons that convinced me. Well, three reasons. One is the only thing one can afford. It's like take it or leave it. I didn't want to go back and work for some jerk, so I figured it'd work for another jerk myself. So I, so that was one reason. The other reason was that it was the Krishna temple. I was very inspired. I said, hey, this is cool. This is going to really be giving me some good karma, good luck, or good something. And I just was like, I didn't recently take any LSD or anything. I was almost intoxicated by the fact that I was thinking, wow, then maybe there is a God. And the third reason was it came with a monkey. You buy the business, you get, and actually the monkey, his name was Mr. Zeeks, because that's the sound he used to make. And we named the business, we changed it from Cornucopia, and we changed the name to Zeke's Old Time Furniture. And rightly or wrongly, everyone thought I was Zeke. So they used to call me that. Mm-hmm. So the monkey was quite rambunctious, and he had a big cage in the basement. And I mentioned Satsang Mart because in the 90s, I kind of had a little reunion with him, and he gave me such a nice embrace and everything. And I won't go through the whole thing, but at one point, I was telling him, we have so much in common, which is not really so true, but we both went to Brooklyn College. He said, yeah, but that's nothing, Maharaj. That temple that you started on 95 Glenville Avenue in Boston, I ended up practically living in that place. I ended up buying it shortly after you went to 38 North Beacon Street, the second time. And he said, yes. But don't you remember? I used to come and sometimes buy some inexpensive, I won't say cheap, inexpensive furniture for the temple. And he said, and you had a monkey in the basement. So he actually remembered. I was thrilled that he remembered such a thing. What? Yeah, well, maybe he bought it from Cornucopia, but he definitely came and got some from me. But sometimes I'd sell a rickety old furniture, and a guy would come and say, I was having dinner with my friends, and that table you sold me collapsed. And it was a real, horror show. I want my money back. I want to, where's the manager? I want to speak with Zeke.
Oh, you want to speak with Zeke? All right. He's in his office down in the basement. So the disgruntled customer would... I said, now be careful with the ladder. You have to kind of go, the steps were like a ladder going down to the basement. Go down to the basement. After about 5 minutes, he'd come up smiling ear to ear. And he'd forget about asking for his money. He was so amused to see Zeke in his office. You know, you know, next time bring banana. So anyway, thank you very much for your question. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Nitya Gaur Premananda.